There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus. Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Manil, and I'm your host. On today's program, score one for the Internet Archive against the FBI. HD radio may be coming down south, and a little look into how the FCC builds its case against pirates. A bunch of interesting stories on today's show. You do want to stay tuned. Well, score one for the Internet Archive, zero for the FBI. Although it hasn't been in the news much lately, the Bureau is still issuing so-called national security letters asking information providers and other organizations to turn over user records secretly. And by secretly, that means whoever receives the letter is barred from talking to anyone, including one's own lawyer, about receiving the letter or what it contains. Internet Archive founder Brewster Kahle received one such letter, but didn't stay silent. Instead, he got the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the ACLU to join in to challenge the letter in court, arguing the program is unconstitutional. Instead of fighting, the FBI decided to withdraw the letter on April 22nd. The ACLU says that this is only the third case it's aware of where a national security letter has been challenged in court. In each of the three court challenges, the FBI has withdrawn the information demands. The Bureau issued nearly 200,000 NSLs between 2003 and 2006, according to a U.S. Department of Justice Inspector General's report. And American-style digital radio may be on the move to Brazil, where that country's Minister of Communications says that his agency is likely to grant official approval for IBOC radio, also known as HD radio here in the U.S. The minister revealed these plans at a breakfast held for 300 Brazilian broadcasters at the annual National Association of Broadcasters convention in Las Vegas. HD radio is already on the air in three Brazilian cities. And this is something we've been talking about quite a bit on the Media Geek radio show. I've had on many times to talk about it. John Anderson of DIYmedia.net, a good friend of mine, and he's writing his doctoral dissertation on HD radio and the adoption of digital radio in the United States. He's been quite critical of it. And a lot of people in the radio industry are very critical of HD IBOC radio. And the reason why is that IBOC radio means in-band on channel, and it means that they're actually adding the digital signal to the conventional analog radio signal. What that means is that each radio signal takes up some space on a dial. If you have an old analog dial, you can, you know, picture it visually. When you add digital, when you add IBOC to it, the signal gets a little fatter. And what happens and what is happening is that then digital radio signals are causing interference to neighboring signals. And this is the big thing that the National Association of Broadcasters has been crying about with regard to low power FM, saying we can't put these stations closer on the dial because they'll cause interference. These 100 watt stations will cause interference with 10 kilowatt stations. And yet the NAB is backing with great gusto digital radio, IBOC radio, which makes the little part of the spectrum stations take up all the fatter, causing interference with neighboring stations. And where it causes the most interference is when the neighboring station is a little distance. When you're just a little bit outside the primary area, it can cut off reception. IBOC radio, digital radio, is being used both on the FM and the AM dials in the United States. And it's getting to the point where some radio groups are no longer using digital radio on the AM dial, in which almost all groups have quit using it at night on the AM dial because of the same phenomenon where the amount of space that the station takes up is being fattened. Only the AM dial is much more susceptible to noise, much more susceptible to interference, especially at night, where it looks like IBOC signals are wreaking havoc and making it difficult for people to hear stations that are normally accustomed to hearing. But that's not stopping the NAB and some of the chief supporters of IBOC and investors like Clear Channel Radio from exporting it overseas. And it seems like Brazil is more than glad to take up and turn their radio dial into something a bit more American, or shall we say, with a bit more interference. In other countries in Europe, they have implemented digital radio, but with a different standard. Instead of trying to shoehorn digital signals onto the analog dial like they've done in the United States, many European countries have pursued creating all new signal space for digital signals, so that there is no interference. Indeed, that's the exact same strategy pursued with digital television in the United States, where a whole new set of spectrum space has been set aside. It is now being used by digital television signals, by HDTV signals, while the analog space is still being used. And I hope you've heard and you do know that your analog TV signals go away at the beginning of 2009. Of course, in that the television broadcasters try to convince the FCC to let them keep the analog signal space while also getting the digital television space, which they got all at no charge. Luckily, they lost on that count, and that analog signal space has been auctioned off, or much of it has been auctioned off for use for all sorts of communications devices. But note, they did not try to cram digital signals in with the existing analog TV signals. Although there would have been a lot more space for it, since the TV spectrum has never been as full as the FM spectrum is, or the AM radio spectrum. Especially the UHF dial has never been completely used to its full capacity, partially due to the much higher cost associated with broadcasting television signals compared to broadcasting radio signals. Nevertheless, they did get all new spectrum for that. And speaking of that spectrum, which has been vacated or will be vacated, the analog television spectrum, Verizon won the auction about a month or so ago for the very, very valuable 700 megahertz space. The reason why this particular space is so valuable and why there was an auction for it is that these radio waves go through walls really well. Anyone who has used a wireless internet or typical cordless phones has definitely experienced the problem of getting these signals maybe even across a house or from a neighbor's house or something. You have to walk around. In many cases, it's the fine art of positioning laptops or positioning antennas to get the best and optimal reception. And that's because the signals used for Wi-Fi, right around the 2 to 3 gigahertz band, don't penetrate walls so well. 700 megahertz used for UHF television does it really well. And so, of course, it's very viable then for anyone who might want to offer a broadband service, wireless service. That would be much better than what we currently experience with Wi-Fi. Verizon won that auction, but because the bidding was fast and furious, Google being the primary competitor of Verizon, it was pushed past a threshold that the FCC had set that if the auction price went above it, therefore new requirements would kick in. The big requirement is an interoperability requirement, which requires the winner of that particular space of spectrum to open up the devices that may be used on that spectrum. So although Verizon may roll out a 4-pay service for people to be able to get various information services on the 700 megahertz band, they're going to have to allow basic open access for different types of devices and different manufacturers. They can't hold it quite so close and quite so proprietary in the same way that, say, cell phone providers are very proprietary on what phones can be used on their service and not being very free and open like it is in Europe and in other countries with cell phone service. And one of the things that Google did just recently was it called on Verizon to once again make clear that they intended to follow through with that regulatory compliant that with that regulatory order. And you say, well, why should they have to? Didn't the FCC already say that this was a requirement, a condition of winning that spectrum? And I would say, well, just look at the Sirius XM satellite radio deal, which I will in a moment, which where you see these two companies pushing the FCC to let them merge, even though the original condition of creating satellite radio in the first place was that they would not allow a merger, was that there would continue to be two companies, there would be competition in the satellite radio space, and they would not be allowed to merge. And now, just 8-9 years later, here they are asking the FCC to let them merge. And so Google, I think, is trying to head off Verizon at the pass, and I think they do have a horse in that race. They have a not just a don't be evil reason why they want Verizon to keep open access to the 700 megahertz spectrum. I'm sure they've figured out a way to make some money since they recently decided to get into the mobile phone market and designing an open operating system to be used in phones, in stark contrast to, say, Apple's iPhone. And Verizon did rise up and say, yes, we intend to hold true to that condition of open interoperability to open devices in the 700 megahertz band. So at least for the moment, we hope that Verizon will stay true to that. But we don't really have a lot of other guarantees that they will, except for the fact that it's required by the FCC. But that's probably only as strong as a new set of FCC commissioners. And there is an interesting announcement that happened in the realm of wireless internet and broadband. Sprint Nextel, one of the larger wireless and cell phone providers in the country, recently announced a deal with Clearwire and other investment partners. And they will combine assets to form a new next-generation wireless communications company that will should be able to provide true broadband speeds over wireless in a cellular domain. And there's a lot of attention being given to this deal. And a lot of people are very excited because in most areas, as I've talked about quite a bit on the program, you often really only have two broadband providers. You can pick DSL or cable, and in some areas, you don't even have that many. You can choose, you have DSL or you have cable, and that's it in terms of broadband access, which means you really don't have competition, and you're really stuck if, say, both carriers have high prices or both carriers block BitTorrent or otherwise degrade your service. It's hard to go and shop around when that's all you have in front of you. So a lot of people are hoping that this Sprint Clearwire deal will amount to creating a third broadcast channel, a broadband channel, for getting internet service apart from cable and apart from DSL. The excitement, of course, of being able to get broadband-type speeds rather than cellular speeds in a wireless form is that you would no longer necessarily be tied to your house or be tied to an office, but would be able to get this service just about anywhere you can get a wireless signal. It's potentially very exciting, although it's only just been announced, and so a lot has yet to be seen, and a lot of it will depend on how investors look at it. And at the same time, we, as I mentioned, have Verizon looking at the 700 megahertz spectrum, which it's recently won the rights to use, possibly rolling out services. So it could be a moment when we see enhanced competition. But industry consolidation is often a force to be reckoned with. And we'll see really how long that's going to be good for. And mentioning satellite radio, as I brought up just a little bit earlier, there seems to be growing steam behind the idea of asking the FCC to set aside a certain amount of the Sirius XM channel capacity for non-commercial service broadcasting if the FCC is going to go ahead and approve that merger. And it seems like most observers, including Wall Street, think the FCC is going to go ahead and approve the merger. The Justice Department, as I mentioned on the show many times before, has said it's okay and put no conditions on the deal. But the FCC has to look at a broader panoply of issues, including the public interest and other sorts of competition issues. And the idea that some channels should be set aside is really picking up steam. As I've mentioned before, this is something which was required when satellite television, direct broadcast satellite television, was approved by the FCC, creating Dish Network and DirecTV. And so if you are a subscriber to Dish Network or DirecTV, there's a slate of channels offered that are all public service, that are all non-commercial, and they actually, you know, cover quite a spectrum. There's like the Rural Network, which provides non-commercial programming specifically to rural America. And if you think about the fact that cable television often isn't available in more rural areas, you can see why it's important to have such a channel on satellite. And one of my favorite channels out there, Free Speech Television, obtained a channel on Dish Network as part of that deal, allowing them to take their programming and distribute it better to public access television channels all over the country, in addition to obviously reach many more homes than they could with just an internet channel. Free Speech TV is really one of the reasons why Democracy Now! In its television form has been distributed far wider and brought an audience to that program, to Amy Goodman, much broader than would have ever happened if it had been strictly stuck with radio. So I'm kind of glad to see that there's more and more of a consensus almost building behind the idea of some channel capacity on a merged XM Sirius being set aside for non-commercial radio. Indeed, American Public Media, which is one of the providers of public broadcasting content, television and radio, is gone on the record saying they would like to see 20% of channel capacity set aside for non-commercial broadcasting. Of course, they have a very big horse in that race. Already, NPR programming, I know, is carried on satellite radio, and there is a sort of quasi-public radio channel which carries a lot of syndicated public radio programming. But setting aside a 20%, I should hope, would mean more channels that are operated independently. Currently, XM and Sirius operate a lot of the channels that they offer, in addition to having already existing radio networks carried like Fox News, CNN, Headline News, etc. But something interesting happened just this past week where senior House Energy and Commerce Committee member Bobby Rush, a Democrat from Chicago, Illinois, where Media Geek is now broadcasting from, he sent a letter to Kevin Martin along with New York Democratic Representative Adolphus Towns, saying that they had fully supported a voluntary commitment of XM and Sirius to carve out 8 channels, 4 from each of them, specifically for minority owners. But then Bobby Rush turned around and said that he and Towns had a miscommunication, saying that while he advocates setting aside channels for minority ownership, both he and Towns are African American, he said that 8 channels aren't nearly enough. And I would tend to agree with that. He wrote, quote, "I believe XM Sirius can designate far more channels than 8, end quote. He suggested something closer to 35% to match the percentage of the population that people of color represent. Also, pushing for more channels has been Senator Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts. So we'll see. The FCC does not have any action on the XM Sirius satellite merger on the May 14th meeting document, a meeting docket, that is. So we'll see. Maybe that will get to in June. XM and Sirius are chomping at the bit. They'd really hope to have this whole deal wrapped up at the end of 2007, and it's already been a couple months since the Justice Department weighed in, so we're all going to wait a little longer to see what the FCC has to say about an XM Sirius merger, though I think the delay, to me at least, indicates that the likelihood of significant conditions being placed on the deal goes up, or it means that there are at least serious, no pun intended, negotiations going on in back channels over those conditions. And that perhaps the reason why it hasn't turned up on a docket yet is because maybe a consensus or an agreement has not really been reached over what those conditions will be. And it seems like every month it goes on, the more and more Sirius and XM are a bit over a barrel. And you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmanel, and I am your host. Check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. That's the home to the Media Geek blog, which celebrates many years. It's seven or eight years on the internet. Gosh, I should know this, shouldn't I? But I like to consider myself an OB, an original blogger, using the original blogger service, which is still on the internet when it was really new, when it wasn't owned by Google, because I could see it had potential as a way of updating the website very quickly and very easily. And I've been keeping it going. It spawned this radio show, and I try to keep it updated every week with news and views on our media environment. Stuff I don't have time for on the show, or just different takes, different links to things I think are interesting there at MediaGeek.net. And of course, the radio show is available at radio.MediaGeek.net. You can download the podcast, you can listen in your browser, or you can just download individual programs to listen on your MP3 player, whether that's the way you primarily listen to the show, or whether you just want to catch something you missed or listen to it again, all there at MediaGeek.net. And of course, if you have any comments about the program, I'd love to hear them. I really would. Send them to me at paul@mediageek.net. So I came across this interesting article in The Lumberjack, which is the student-run newspaper of Humboldt State University in Humboldt, California. And it's about Humboldt Free Radio Alliance, which was an unlicensed station operating in that region in Northern California. And the interesting thing is that the paper appears to have filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the FCC, asking for documents related to the FCC's monitoring of Humboldt Free Radio. And what comes out of it is an interesting sort of eye into how the Federal Communications Commission keeps tabs on unlicensed and pirate stations and starts to build a case about them. And what's interesting is that the FCC used a lot of internet tools. And by that, we mean websites where different people associated with the station had posted. It also revealed some of the complaints that the FCC had received regarding the station. One of the complaints, where the name of the complainant had been blacked out, goes, quote, "Are you going to do anything about this pirate station? They have nothing good to say about George W. Bush. They're constantly using profanity. I just thought it would be good to stop this. The local police will not get involved," end quote. And it's true. In every state except for New Jersey and Florida, there are no state laws against broadcasting without a license. So, of course, no, the local police will not get involved. And certainly the FCC is not supposed to go after unlicensed radio stations because of their political viewpoint, although obviously they are permitted under law to go after them because they are not at all licensed. It's interesting as well is that the FCC appears to have been monitoring MySpace pages, which they printed out and placed into their file, into the case folder, in their case against the Humboldt Free Radio Alliance. The webpage is shown on MySpace, apparently shows a number of people who are DJs. It also looks like the FCC photographed and took GPS readings of a house used by the Alliance. And this is according to a document dated December 17th. The documents also included 13 photographs of cars, license plates, a house, and the Alliance's broadcast antenna. Librarian Leslie Stanton of St. Helen, California, received one of two notices of unlicensed operation the FCC issued during the case. And the FCC documents stated that Stanton was contacted because she owned the house which was pictured in the FCC documents. And the FCC documents refer to Stanton as a homeowner and not and a member of the Free Radio Alliance. And Stanton told the Jack Online newspaper that it was news to her and that she'd bought the house when her daughter went to Humboldt State and rented out through a property manager since. She said, hey, I don't know anyone associated with this station. And it also looks like the wily FCC agents used that secret tool known as Google to track down more information about Humboldt Free Radio because one of the documents stated, quote, Googled Humboldt Free Radio Alliance and found an indie media article related to our shutdown, end quote. Document also said, quote, since information indicates station off the air and may be trying to find a new location, we'll close the case based on the certified mail receipt. A new location will require a new case, end quote. So the station had received a letter from the FCC and decided to shut down. But then they found on the Indie Media Network that perhaps a new station will be going on the air. So it's interesting seeing some more information about how the FCC builds its case against a free broadcaster, against an unlicensed broadcaster. And it shows you that FCC agents are just like us. They can use the internet and they can use Google to go find the information they're looking for. And so thanks for tuning into another edition of Media Geek. As you can tell, I'm still getting settled here in Chicago. I'm actually still working out of a home studio, and I don't yet have a full production studio in front of me. I've been back and forth to my old hometown out of Champaign-Urbana because my wife and my house and my cats are still there. And so I apologize. I haven't had a chance to get any interviews going. I'm still working on getting all of that stuff together. But I want to try and keep fresh shows coming your way into the interim so that you just weren't hearing repeats. So if you got any suggestions, please send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in. This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at mediageek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kosilov in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.